Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. This podcast is a series of conversations centered around understanding the values, beliefs, and intentions behind leaving a legacy. You will hear from successful business owners just like yourself who want to leave an impact for generations to come. Let's get started. Welcome to the Business Legacy Podcast. My name is Paul Dio. I'm your co-host. Today we have a very special guest. His name is Joseph Lento. Met Joseph a couple months ago, and I really enjoy some of the content that he's putting out. And one piece of content that stuck out was the topic of how do I pass money on to my children without spoiling them? Now, as you can imagine, the people that are listening to this episode, if you've listened to this episode, we've always talked about what type of legacy you'd like to leave, how do you want to be remembered, but we really don't get into the mechanics behind it and some of the things that you need to consider when leaving a legacy. So, Joseph, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great. So, Joseph, what made you come up with what contributed to talking about this subject?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm an estate planning attorney. So, this is pretty much all my clients talk to me about is this type of stuff with trust and figuring out the best way to streamline the transfer to their kids without messing it up. And as you know, because I know you do a lot of stuff with your clients with respect to this type of planning, money makes people do really strange things. And you have to plan all these scenarios that even though they're remote, they could very well happen, especially when it comes to passing on real estate to children, for example, where they have to kind of get along in a certain way. And even though right now everything's fine, you can't assume it's going to be the case when it actually comes time for you to pass away. There's no longer that one person in control or making decisions. It's now a consensus, especially when they're married and have in-laws and all that fun stuff. So going down that path, one of the questions becomes, okay, if I am leaving money to my children and I'm doing it through a trust, how do I do it in a way where it doesn't negatively impact that child? And what I mean by that is it doesn't make their life more complicated than it needs to be, because most of us think, oh, I just got, you know, $500,000 to $1 million from my parents. This is amazing. What happens in practice is, especially if your children are not, or they're younger, or they're not financially savvy or financially mature, they may not know what to do with it. And then on top of that, their spouse might have plans different from what that child wants to do. And both of those people, the child and the in-law, the spouse, the daughter-in-law, their son-in-law, might think differently about it than what the parent intended. So I wrote this article, Three Ways to Not Spoil Your Children Unintentionally, is pretty much what the title is, on my website. And I can certainly walk you through the big topics and maybe we can dig into whatever one you think is most interesting.
Yeah. I think the first thing that I would think about is when it comes to spoiling kids or figuring out how to do that, where's the parent usually coming from? Is it because they were successful and they don't want their kid to feel entitled? Or where do you think that comes from? Is just the overall question.
I think it's really just about complacency, because when I have clients who inherit money, and once again, I see it more in the real estate context. A lot of my examples will be in that way. But if they're inheriting a commercial property or a large residential property, that's cash flowing enough for them to not have to work. And if they're not already established in their careers, they might think that that's more than enough money to live off of, and why do anything else? And that's really what it comes down to, because naturally, as a parent, you want to take care of your kids, but at the same time, you want them to be a benefit to society. You want to see them live with a purpose. And I can only speak for myself in this matter, but when I was younger, when I was in my 20s, early teens, my goal was just to make enough money to survive. And as soon as I did well enough, I could essentially just do, like, you know, they call it FIRE or whatever, financial independence, retire early. Just the idea of, like, once I have enough, I don't need to work anymore. And now that I have a family of my own and I am at the point where, you know, that's not really an option, but, you know, it's more feasible, it made me realize, oh, wow, like, that's a complete wrong way to do it. And on top of that, and Paul, maybe you can speak to this a little bit, but I've also seen a lot now where clients are retiring and they are bored out of their mind. Like, you would think retirement is like this golden, and for the first couple of years, it probably is, because it's just nice to be able to do whatever you want. But the real goal is financial freedom. In other words, having the ability to say, I do or I do not want to work, or I don't want to do this type of work. That's really what you're going for. And when you lose that sense of going to the office or working with your peers or whatever it might be, you actually are in a much worse spot for a lot of people. So most people now, especially the clients I'm seeing, they're retiring for a couple of years and then they're trying to find a retirement job to fill their days. And naturally, if you're a parent and you're leaving money to your children, once again, if your child is in their early 20s or maybe early 30s, you don't want them to have that type of experience too young, because they won't have the emotional maturity, the financial maturity to realize, no, I should keep working. I should have a craft. I should have a skill set and use that to essentially give me something to look forward to developing as years go on. So,
are you ever in a position where clients are just asking you, well, how much should I give my kids? Like, they're giving you a discretion of like, well, how much is too much or whatnot? Like, talk to me about that. Yeah.
That's a really good question. So when it comes to their kids, they sometimes bring it up, but they usually almost always default to, you know what, they'll figure it out. I'll give them half each, or, you know, I'll split it equally among them. But where the question is really interesting is when you have clients who don't have children. They have no kids, but they have nieces and nephews. And then maybe they have even grandnieces and grandnephews. And that's where it becomes like, okay, how much do I give to the kids? What percentages, what amounts? And the other thing that kind of comes into play is charities, because now there's like this balancing act of, do I provide for my extended family versus is there a cause that I really care about, or multiple causes? And that's, once again, I honestly, this might be the lazy approach, I almost always say, let's talk with your financial advisor, because they're more aware. Because usually when a client's going to the estate planning attorney, they're just meeting me. Like, I don't know the full context of their family situation. I don't know what they've been doing for the last decades. Whereas you, as the financial advisor, or wealth manager, you've seen them actually develop the wealth. You've seen certain forks in the road that they had to figure out. And I think given that context, other people like the financial advisor are better value in that sense. Whereas I'm more of, I'll help with the legal side of things. I can tell you what's gone wrong, but I can't, you know, direct subjectively how much you should be giving to your family members who I've never met in my life.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And you're right, where it's the financial advisor that kind of walks you through those conversations. The unfortunate part is that I think I've seen this a lot with people who have wealth in real estate, where maybe their first interaction with defining beneficiaries are putting together an estate plan, right? Where they don't have a financial advisor. So I think there's two sides of the coin, where financial advisor can help them determine how they want to give to their kids. But then there's the other side, which is their first financial conversation might be, you know, what happens when I die, as opposed to everything else. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And that's a good point.
So tell us about some different ways, or the three ideas where we can figure out how not to spoil our children by giving them everything, or just putting them as a beneficiary when we pass away.
Yeah. So I'll start with the boring one, but it's also the most common. Mm-hmm. And that's called delayed wealth transfer, which is a fancy way of saying, instead of giving it to them when they're 25, 30, 35, you push off the distribution dates till they're a little bit older. And once again, the idea is that if they wait until they're 40, 50, I even have clients who wait till 60, believe it or not, for their kids to get their money outright. Now they already have a full career. They're completely vested. You know, they have the financial maturity. And when you do that, they can't be spoiled, because essentially they've already been working most, if not half, their life. And that's kind of just where life itself will unspoil them, if that makes sense.
Interesting. Now, how could, just as a side question, how are there any limitations as far as age is concerned, or you can pick any age?
You can pick any age. But what ends up being the actual limitation in practice is the trustee, because you obviously want someone in control of this money in the meantime. And unfortunately, for most people, the only ones they really have, if anyone, and sometimes they don't even have this, are their siblings. Every once in a while, they have like a niece and nephew that's really sharp, and they're okay with this type of thing. But it's a huge obligation to carry it. And what I usually tell clients to see if, you know, maybe they have that CPA accountant that could be like a co-trustee with the beneficiary. That the co-trustee thing might work out better. But what really happens is you have to consider the trustee aging out and what happens if the trustee ages out. Because if that happens, and as you know, Paul, if you've worked with clients with trust before, when you have the wrong trustee in place or a replacement trustee that doesn't know really what's going on in terms of the whole family context, it becomes a complete mess. Mm-hmm. And I don't think clients really understand that until, unfortunately, they're no longer there. I mean, they never figure it out, really. I just see it on the back end. I hope that kind of answers your question there.
Yeah, especially if you know if you do have that date at 60 where you don't get the money till 60, like who are you finding, a 10-year-old or 15-year-old to be the trustee?
Yeah, and that's once again where you typically see like a corporate trustee. Yeah. And that's only obviously for clients who have a lot. I mean, more than, and then that becomes, it comes down to like, you know, generation skipping transfers and all that fun stuff. So there's usually more to that. That's an extreme scenario. Typically, you see the delayed wealth transfer to like age 40 something is usually the more practical side of it.
Got it. And can you do that based on a specific, so each individual beneficiary, you can say, okay, you know, child A is 21, child B is 30. Is that possible?
Yeah. So you're actually alluding to a really good point. When you are leaving money to your children in trust, you have two options, generally speaking. You can do what's called a pot trust, which means everything goes into a pot. And then when a certain date hits, it goes equally to the kids. Generally a terrible idea. And I'm going to walk you through why. And then the other option is you pass away. At that point in time, it splits the interest equally among sub-trusts, separate trusts for each child. And then depending on how they need it, up to that point of distribution, it will be spent down or invested in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I am much more in favor of the separate trust, although it does have slightly more admin, is because by doing that, now the beneficiary is much more accountable to the trustee with respect to their own trust. But also, one kid might go to medical school and one kid might learn a trade out of high school and just decide to start a home business or something like that. And so they're going to have much different values. And also, if you do a separate trust and you have each kid act as co-trustee with some type of investment discretion or the ability to hire different investment advisors, you give them that autonomy that they really should have to get to that level you want to be at when they do get the money outright.
All right. So that's delayed wealth transfer, the most common. Yeah. What's the second way of implementing this?
Yeah. So this one I had a little bit of fun with, I'll be honest with you. This is one of those things where you hear more about like in law school than in real life. But I figured, you know what? What the heck? So I call this social engineering. And I got this concept from my tax teacher who pretty much said, you know, the government makes you pay taxes for three reasons: to raise revenue, to redistribute wealth, and to pretty much dictate your behavior in society. And so I was like, oh, that's a cool concept. So if you apply that to trust, that third one, the dictating society, the behavioral mechanism, you can play around with it in a way where you say, I'm going to give you a couple examples, milestones. So for example, hey, I want all my kids to be attorneys or doctors or graduates, PhDs, whatever it might be. If they get that certificate from a legitimate college, and you can go into all these different scenarios of what is legitimate or accredited and what is not, they get X percentage distributed out or a dollar amount. And those types of games, in a way, can incentivize them to do certain things you don't want to do. Now, the problem with this is that your beneficiaries are usually much more clever than you think. So they always figure out workarounds to this type of stuff. The other thing on top of it is it makes it awkward for the trustee because they might have some type of discretionary calls and may have to deal with some type of potential litigation if the client, the beneficiary and the trustee disagree on whether or not a certain milestone has been hit. So like I said, if you do like undergrad or graduate degree, that's pretty straightforward. But if there's certain professions or skills you want them to learn, now it becomes subjective. You don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And another thing on top of that, and if I've actually done this, believe it or not, which is very awkward for the trustee, but drug tests, especially if you have, this is actually almost out of scope of the conversation, but still it kind of comes into play, is where you leave money for someone who you know already has a history of substance abuse issues, or you suspect they might be, it might not even be substance abuse, it could be gambling, you know, just bad behavior. And there'll be tests in place for the trustee to try to determine whether or not they're living the lifestyle that the parent wanted them to live.
Interesting.
So those are two, but like I said, those work much better in theory than practice for most clients. To delayed wealth transfer is usually the go-to out of those two so far.
Then you have, so there's milestone accomplished, passing a drug test. Yeah, just name a few of the other ones because it's really interesting.
Yeah, the other ones are actually ones I've been thinking about for my own family, to be completely honest with you. Because like I said, I am my own business owner. I love being working for myself. I realize that it's not for everyone, but if one of my kids did want to start a business, or if they did want to pursue things that I thought was ambitious, I would love to have a way to kind of accelerate that learning process for them. So one of them in particular talks about if they want to invest in real estate or start a business, you'd be able to give them like a loan advance. And naturally, the loan advance would be very favorable terms. They have to comply with IRS standards, not considered, you know, all this other stuff going on. But that would be a cool way to kind of build up the entrepreneurial spirit, assuming, you know, your kid wants to do it. Another thing we talk about here is income matching or charitable donation matching, which once again, income matching side of it is, if your kid gets a great job, hey, we'll double it or we'll pay an extra percent on top of it based on the value of that salary. And once again, you can game that system, so you got to be careful with it. But that's one idea. And then the other one, the matching charitable donations, I got this thinking about employers. It's very common for employers to tell their employees, hey, if you have a cause you care about, you know, for this month or whatever reason, we'll match it, just part of like an employee benefit program. And I was like, well, you can incorporate that into a trust too, if you'd like. So those are just a few of the other ideas that you might want to consider if you are kind of like me and you're a weirdo and you want to give the trustee a run for their money.
Now, does the parent have to be deceased, or can they be alive with these stipulations?
They could. They could be alive. It could be an irrevocable trust, because naturally, like I said, wealthier clients, they'll set up these trusts in advance and start a gifting program. If you're gifting less than $16,000 per year per donee, you can get away with it without any income or gift tax implications, state tax implications. And the trick with that, though, is when the parent's a trustee, there's a lot of reversionary rules to the estate. So usually there could be a wink, wink, hint, hint here in terms of the parent's control over the trust. But generally speaking, even with those types of trusts, while the parent's still living, you don't want to have them in direct control of it, or you could cause problems for tax purposes.
Got it. And what's the third way? What's the third way of...
The third way is probably the more common sense approach, honestly, of all of this. And that is just talk to your kids. Lead by example. Explain your story, how you got to where you are today. Once again, thinking back to my own experience, you know, growing up, I was completely oblivious to what my parents did with their money. Naturally, it was not a conversation topic during dinner table. But I was able to see how my parents indirectly used some of the money. I was able to see how my dad built a business. And naturally, as I got older and started my own business, I was able to ask questions. So if you're a parent, and for whatever reason, you've been holding off on conversations with your kids about money, now would be an awesome time, if they're of, you know, a decent age, to start talking about it. I actually have one client, super impressive, where they were talking to their kids about money when they were like preteens. And now these kids who are graduating, they're not even in college yet, they're just graduating high school. They have more money in their savings accounts than some of my clients do at age 60. It's insane. So there are certainly, you know, outliers there, but the sooner you can have those conversations and walk them through the struggles you went through financially, especially if you're one of those people that came from first, second generation immigrants. I love those stories. I think those should always be passed on to the client's kids. And they definitely, even if you think your kids aren't really paying attention, I know they are, because what happens is on my end, when I talk to my clients, they tell me the stories that their parents told them. So I know it's getting in their head. It's just a matter of whether or not they're showing that to you.
Well, Joseph, thank you so much. Where can we learn more about you, and how can we get more of our questions answered?
Yeah, so all my information, all my articles, free resources, my testimonials, everything about me is on my website. My website is perennialestateplanning.com. That's perennial spelled with one R, two N's. And if you Google that, you'll find me right away. I'm in Stoneham, Mass. And and obviously, if someone has specific questions, you'll see on the website how to contact me directly through email, phone, all that fun stuff.
All right. Well, I'm sure this isn't the last time we'll have you on. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Legacy Podcast. Now, if you can do us a favor and leave a review, any type of stars on any platform that you use, it would be greatly appreciated. For more information about us, the other co-hosts, and the Legacy Podcast, go to businesslegacypodcast.com. That's businesslegacypodcast.com. Have a great day.